Years and years ago, I led a house church, and I decided, like, we're going to go through the whole book of Hebrews, kind of verse by verse. And so that gives you a little window into the kind of Bible intensity I had at that point in my life. So this brought up a lot of memories for me. But I titled this sermon "Suffering and Prayers," because there's a lot about those two things in this passage. And I think that when we look at the example in this passage of Jesus and how Jesus handled suffering in his life, there's a lot that we can gain. Because here's the thing, no matter who you are, if you live long enough, you will suffer in life. It's a part of life. And at this particular period of time in our culture, we've gotten so advanced in so many ways that we have some of us in our mindset, and maybe as a culture at large, we've kind of come to this idea that we can somehow avoid suffering, that we have so many things at our fingertips that we can get. We can run here and get this and run to a doctor there and go here and there, that somehow we can avoid suffering, and we can't. And the good news is that we follow after a Messiah who engaged in suffering and can show us some things about what we might want to expect when suffering comes our way and what could our response be. The response all of us have, including Jesus, as we'll see in a moment, is why? Why me? You know, why am I suffering in this way? So we can kind of get that one out of the way. We all know we're going to do that when we suffer at some point. We're going to say, why? Why me? But how we respond after that really makes an incredible difference in the type of life that we live, the type of legacy that we leave behind, and really just how we have shown up in the world. So I just want to start with this discussion about this of suffering and prayers, on just some of the ways that people suffer. And I want to tell you a story from my life. So some of the definitions I found, they talked about that suffering can be physical, so your body, it can be mental in your thoughts, emotional in your feelings, and psychological, which is kind of the same as those, and that it implies a conscious endurance of pain or stress. So you are aware that you're going through an extended period of pain and distress. Things like a famine, being in a famine where you don't have access to enough food and water. Being sick a lot, having physical ailments over and over. Poverty is a form of suffering, homelessness. The idea around suffering that we're working with today is an agony or pain that feels too intense, that this feels too heavy for me to hold. And we will all experience those types of situations. The first thing that comes to mind for me is that some of you were here for this. About 5 years ago, I was in this period of a lot of physical things happening. So I was at kind of this pressure point in my life. Benjamin and Malia were little. I was at the height of doing a lot of traveling for work, and my front tooth split and cracked and ended up having to be removed. And then I had all these like retainers with fake teeth on them, but my teeth were moving and changing, and so they weren't fitting right, and I'd have to go get them, and I would be traveling and doing workshops and things, and then I would go out to eat with people, and I'd have to try to like eat, and the flipper thing in my mouth would be like falling out, and I'd have to kind of like hide it and stuff. And then around that same time, I went to the gym, and I was exercising, doing my normal workout, and my chest separated from my shoulder. It just completely separated. And I rolled off of the bench, and I was in shock, and I had to have it surgically reattached. And at the same time, I was just getting a lot of sickness, maybe from the traveling, I don't know. And Malia was little. She wasn't sleeping that well. Benjamin, man, he had the hardest time sleeping regularly when he was little. So it was a lot of adjustments in life, and a lot of physical pain and discomfort. And that was a period that felt like kind of like suffering to me. As much as, you know, there's all different kinds. I just thought about this physical example. It's an obvious one. But there's other kinds of suffering. And if we were to do an honest poll of our congregation, you might not have any external ways that someone can see that you're suffering, but you might be suffering internally, silently. There might be things going on emotionally within you that feels like suffering. Maybe you're really, really lonely, and that causes you a great amount of emotional pain. Maybe you're lonely friendship-wise, spouse-wise, family-wise. That can be a form of really intense suffering. Maybe you're suffering from a lot of anxiety or depression. Maybe you can't even pinpoint what it is. That all of these are ways of suffering that will visit our lives in some ways, physical, emotional, those kinds of things. And we will ask why. You know, I mean, if your brain's working semi-normal, you'll probably ask, why God, why me? Why are these things happening to me? It seems to be wired into us. And I think it's actually a clue that we ask that question, why, about what we do with our suffering. Because there's something about us as human beings, we have this sense, unless it's completely stamped out of us, that there is a dignity to our spirit, that when we are suffering, when pain and the limits of our endurance are tested, we feel something that is so deep within our soul that makes us question, why would this happen to me? Because my spirit, my soul tells me that I'm made for something greater and better than suffering. So I think there's a clue in that suffering with us when we ask the question, why? Now, for me, when I think about the story I just shared, a lot of those answers are easy for the types of suffering that I was engaged in. That it was, I played a lot of contact sports, and so my tooth died, and then with some outdated dental practices, it got weaker, and then it cracked. Okay, that makes sense. And then with exercise and working out and lifting weights, I didn't sleep well the night before, and I, you know, was burning the candle at both ends, and so my body wasn't prepared for the stress. I was already under psychological stress, then I was fatigued and all these things. So for me, in that situation, the answer of why was a pretty simple one. And if we are honest with ourselves, there are a lot of aspects of our suffering that is self-induced. Am I right? And we still might ask, why God me? And your friends are looking like, man, how do I tell them? Like, they're living this way. This is the normal result of the lifestyle choices you're making. You know, why me? You know, I hurt my knee. And it's like, well, you didn't exercise for 3 years and then you got out and played ultimate frisbee for 3 hours. So yeah, that's not a Job-like situation, right? So I don't want to spend too much time dealing with that in this text of those kind of really common cause and effects. But I do want to say this, and then we're going to jump into this text here. There is a quality that I think exists in this text and throughout the scriptures around suffering that's important to acknowledge. Remember a few weeks ago, we were on the practice of choose beauty. We talked about that the world was imbued with this creative, awesome potential that God created, said it was good, not perfect, but good, which meant that choices and decisions could be made to further make something beautiful, to make something amazing, to build and to shape, which means we have choice. We have freedom. And to be free and to not suffer don't go together. They don't go together. If every time we made a choice that could end up with our suffering or somebody else's suffering, God stopped us, we wouldn't be free. So again, tied to the way God made us in our human spirit if you like freedom, then you should expect also, unfortunately, suffering. To take away one, you have to take away the other. It's kind of like the villain in all of the fictional movie plots. I just want to bring order to the universe, you know? And they're like, you want to take away our freedom? He's like, yes, because that will give order, you know? And I'm not going to talk about Darth Vader and all that because y'all get me on that stuff. But that's the story with every big villain. They just want to create order by taking away choice from everybody. They take away all the options for suffering as long as they're in control. So for some of you, that's all you might need today to take away, to think about where you're at and your thoughts about suffering is freedom and suffering are friends, unfortunately. So what do we do when suffering visits us and there is no good answer for why? It visits our family, it visits our doorstep. Let's take a look and see what we can learn from this text about Jesus. So verse 7, during the days of Jesus's life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverent submission. So Jesus was in a situation in life. It says during the days of Jesus's life on earth, so multiple days it says here, he was in a situation in which he was offering up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears. That's really dramatic. Like, he is really going to town. He's really crying. He's really upset. And he's really asking for God to change the circumstances of where he's at in life. And it says he was heard. We'll come back to that in a minute. So, you know, the two Greek words around here for prayers and petitions are important. The first one, prayers, and I'm just going to butcher these names, y'all. I just am, okay? Deesis is just kind of like a prayer, a request. It's kind of the normal thing we think about prayer, asking for something from God. And then the next one, supplications or petitions, hekateria, asking in a humble way. And what's interesting about that one, that I want you to imagine the depth of the pain Jesus is in, the suffering he's in, is this idea of supplication in this definition is like you're very humbly going before somebody with a lot of power who could help you out, but you're trying to like make yourself as low and as humble as possible, and you're basically begging. You are really like, I need help. This is more than I can bear. You have something you can do about this. And I'm asking, I'm bringing an offering of this prayer in hopes that you can take it away from me, because I don't think I can bear this any longer. Have you ever done that with God? Have you ever gone to God and said in anguish, I can't bear another second of this feeling, of this pain, of this circumstance. I can't hold it. I have many times. And the interesting thing, one of the interesting things to me here is it says Jesus's prayers were heard. And then we find out what happens afterwards in a moment. And here's the thing. This suffering with Jesus, he anticipated it, but it wasn't his fault. It wasn't the result of his poor actions, but it was something he was willing to go through, this crucifixion experience, something he was willing to go through because of something that he imagined was on the other side of it. He didn't know it. He had to imagine it. He had to have faith and believe that there was something else on the other side of the suffering, that he had to come to this suffering with a great amount of passion. That's what passion is. It's the willingness to go through great suffering for something that's greater than the suffering itself. It is an incredibly powerful tool, and it separates civilizations, families, cities. It separates all of human history of how, if a person has passion, if they're willing to suffer for something that they see is greater than the suffering. And Jesus's suffering was for our sake, for our salvation. And yet, when he was actually experiencing the suffering, when he was in the middle of it, he essentially was begging to be taken out of it. What that tells me is you can't avoid suffering, and you can't avoid the impact of suffering in your life. If Jesus couldn't do it, if Jesus came to a prayers of tears and cries and supplications, then if your strategy and your life plan has been, how do I avoid all suffering in my life? How do I navigate and move through my life and avoid suffering? You are not in good company. Yeah, or someone else's suffering. Why do these things happen to us? And if we stay at that question and we don't realize it's not as much why the suffering is going to happen, that's concern, that should be a concern of ours, but what do we do when suffering happens to us and we know it's going to get to a point that no matter how great of a life we want to live or the goals that we have, it will become completely unbearable to us at some point. So that's where Jesus gets to. And then it says, the narrator says in verse 8, son though he was, Jesus was a son of God, as it said in the earlier verses that we read aloud. Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. He learned obedience from what he suffered. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. Whoa, that's a big sentence. We could talk for a long time just about that one sentence. This verse right here, it says, Jesus reminds us was the begotten Son of God. It's what it says in the beginning of this passage in the first few verses, that he became a child of God. There's a moment when Jesus is baptized. That's the beginning of Lent, actually. He gets baptized and he goes into the desert for 40 days. And the voice from heaven says, you are my son in whom I am well pleased. He's an approved son, child of God. And this passage also says he is ordained to this high priesthood place with this guy called Melchizedek. We're not really going to go down the Melchizedek lane because that's a whole rabbit trail situation there that the Hebrews writer is really fond of. But he's ordained as his high priest. He's approved by God as a child of God. We know him as Jesus the Christ, but the text says he wasn't perfect. Interesting. You probably heard that all your life if you grew up in church. Jesus was perfect. He was perfect. That was the whole thing. That was his whole deal, is he was perfect. And it says, once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. So what does the word here, perfect, mean? Teleao in the Greek. That's the phrase made perfect. And if we were to translate that into English, the definition is to complete, to be complete, to accomplish something, to come to the end of something, to consecrate, to finish, to fulfill, to make it what it is intended to be at the end. Which means the one thing Jesus needed, the one thing he lacked to become full and complete was suffering. There we go, back to it. We can't avoid it. Jesus couldn't even avoid it. That in order for Jesus to have the full experience of what it meant to be human, he had to endure great and powerful suffering, to be brought to his knees by this suffering, and for God to hear him call out for help and to answer him, no. I'm not going to take away your suffering. Doesn't that suck? I mean, so much of our prayer lives revolve around asking God to say yes to this question. Please take away my suffering. But for Jesus even to come into the fullness of who he was as a human being, as the Christ, he had to come to that point and hear the answer from God, no. Even though you are an approved son of God, a high priest for all the people, and that you have every access to the throne of heaven, my answer to you related to your suffering is you will not be relieved of your suffering. It is unfortunate that many of us are unprepared by what we've been taught and experienced, that that is true. I want to take one step back and read a little bit more from Hebrews to talk about one of the reasons why this seemed important for what Jesus was doing. And it's going to come back and relate to us. So, what is this? Is this Hebrews? Yeah, this is still 5 here. Every high priest is selected from among the people and is appointed to represent the people in matters related to God. This is the first verse of Hebrews 5. To offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and are going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness. So this is the high priest mediating for the people. This is why he has to offer sacrifice for his own sins as well as for the sins of people. For Jesus to become complete, to come to the end of what he was made for in his earthly life, he had to be able to sympathize with us in our suffering. Not to remove our suffering, but to become known, to know us in our suffering. Just like if a house is being built and all the materials are there, and the plans there, and the contractors there, and all the workers are there, and everything is there. It's not complete until all of those things are all put into the exact place, and the last little piece of trim is put up, and the last paint is put up there. That until Jesus had experienced this suffering the way a human high priest interceding between God and man would, the work wasn't done. He wasn't all that he had meant to be. He was not complete and mature. And here's what it has. Here's this writer of Hebrews. He's writing a lot about this idea of perfection in terms of completeness. I want to read to you a little bit further down in this same chapter in verse 11. It says this as he's continuing to teach about Jesus and the life that we are to live and emulate and follow after. He says in verse 11, "We have much to say about this, but it is hard to make it clear to you because you no longer try to understand." That was a slick way of saying You're a really stubborn jerk. Verse 12, "In fact, though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you the elementary truths of God's word all over again. You need milk, not solid food. Anyone who lives on milk, being still an infant, is not acquainted with the teaching about righteousness." And here's the line that we're going to focus on for a second. "But solid food is for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil." So that verse, it says, solid food is for the mature. If you had to guess, what word do you think that word mature is very close to that we just talked about? Teleos. So the word mature means complete, to grow up full of age, perfect. So the writer of Hebrews is saying, Jesus suffered to become his finished product, complete, whole, mature. And he is also saying later on here that maturity, this solid food of maturity, completeness for us, is people who are able to distinguish between good and evil. So made perfect, Jesus being made perfect, and the mature here in verse 14 are both from this same word, meaning perfect or complete. Remember what we talked about in the beginning, that to be a human being, to have freedom to choose, also means that we have to be willing to accept what? Suffering. Whether you're willing to accept it or not, it's coming. And this passage here says, in order for us to be complete, to be perfect, the way that Jesus was, as Jesus pursued and went into his suffering, that if we are mature, it means we are able to choose. Not based on the avoidance of suffering, but based on being able to distinguish good from evil. If we are to choose good in the same way that Christ did, we will enter in and through suffering. The difference is we will do it not hiding, not cringing, not trying to avoid it at all costs, but in the full affirmation of our human spirits. In the amen of life, knowing, I've said this several times over the past few years, when my wife and I, Becky, are talking about things and there's something going on, something in work life, in church life, and I'm like, this happened. And she's like, I am so sorry that happened. And I'm really thankful that she responds that way. And I can also say, I'm sorry too. And I chose this. I chose it. It was my choice to choose this life and to choose this job and this career and to build this family in this city. And so the suffering that I encounter, I choose it. I say yes to it because I don't have another option. If I want to live the affirmative amen that my life has for me. So that's our predicament. Do we want to come to completion? Do we want to be full and mature? Because if we do, it means that we have to make peace with the fact that we are going to engage in suffering and pain. I used to tell my kids when I taught high school, I remember messages coming on about, you can be anything you want to be. You've just got to try really hard and do all these things. And I would say, no, you can't. You can't be whatever you want to be. There's thousands of things you can't be, even if you wanted to be. Life doesn't give you that amount of options. If you're not a good leader, be a good follower. Pick the person you follow well. That's what I tell when they get on, say, all of you are leaders. No, you're not. Most of you are followers. So play the hand you were dealt well and pick from the choices you have, knowing you will suffer, what will bring your life to fruition, and ask God for that, to guide you into that. You see, sometimes in our world, in our culture, filled with things to be guilty about, we have boiled down this gospel of Jesus to having guilt and innocence. And that's an important point to the gospel. But the writer of Hebrews is very concerned with people being stuck on that milk of just, yes, you understand the very elementary things about this, but what I'm writing to you about right now is maturity and completion. Will you get past the question of why? Not to shame you when you're asking that question, Jesus asks it too, but to say there's more for you than just to ask why me, and to say how? How can I live this life? The cards that I've been dealt with, all my limitations, with all the choices I have to make, with this big affirmation of life, of what God has given me. This is the maturity of making choices while knowing we are made for suffering. So this idea of innocence, Howard Thurman, in this book on community that he talks about, he describes the difference between innocence and goodness. And he describes it like this. That is, a child is innocent. Maturity again. But a man or woman, he's writing, you know, a while back, a man who has learned how to winnow beauty out of ugliness, purity out of stain, tranquility out of tempest, joy out of sorrow, life out of death, choices. Only such a man may be said to be good, but he is no longer innocent. Writer of Hebrews, verse 14, literally, because those who have trained themselves, constantly trained themselves to distinguish good and evil, literally because of practice, have their senses trained. A different way of saying a similar thing about suffering from James Baldwin, American intellectual writing many essays, plays, etc. He said this, "I do not mean to be sentimental about suffering. Enough is certainly as good as a feast." I don't really know what he means by that, but people who cannot suffer can never grow up, can never discover who they are. That man who is forced each day to snatch his manhood, his identity, out of the fire of human cruelty that rages to destroy it, knows if he survives his effort, and even if he does not survive it, something about himself and human life that no school on earth, and indeed no church, can teach. He achieves his own authority that is unshakable. What I think he's talking about there is a sense of the maturity of the human spirit. That same question of why. Why is this happening to me? Because we know that God made us for endurance, for maturity, so for completeness. So the good news to you this morning, the good news from the gospel of Jesus, is that you were made, that your spirit was made to endure suffering and to come out of the other side of it more full, more whole, and more complete. Jesus, in the Gospel of John, anticipating this suffering, he says, "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Jesus had passion. And that's about all we can have in light of this. Because he said that way before the fervent cries and prayers and petitions, when he was actually at the precipice of this crucifixion. Back to Hebrews, finishing up here. In verse 9, it said, "After all of this, and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him." And so, 2 points here that I want to conclude with that can give us a lot of assurance and hope and faith in this life that includes suffering. So, Jesus had to suffer, one, because if he was to be our perfect sacrifice, our high priest, he had to know what it was like to be us. He had to understand us fully and become like us. So the only thing that God cannot do is suffer. But God chose to do that in and through Jesus anyway. And second, that this perfect sacrifice that Jesus was becoming, the writer of Hebrews also gives us the picture of Jesus as a high priest. And the high priest could only mediate between God and people because the high priest also knew what it was like to fall short, to suffer, to be weak. And that's what Jesus found out as Jesus pursued the suffering of the cross and did not get away from it, but endured it and felt the forsakenness of God in that place on the cross. And so if you wonder, can God forgive me for the things that I've done, the things that I've said, the things that I've thought, that this passage of Hebrews reminds us of the lengths to which God went in order to sympathize with us, to connect God, who the only thing God could not relate to us in was suffering, down to our level, down to that painful spot, and to say, I am willing to go through, I'm willing, I have the passion to go through the same things you try to avoid and I've tried to avoid as a human being. I'm willing to go through it all to be with you, to connect you fully back to me. So there's a lot of things to say about suffering, and we've said some of them. But the main thing I want you to know is this, that you'll suffer. Jesus suffered. When you suffer, to know that there is something amazing on the other side of it for you, either in this life or the next, and also that you don't really have a choice. You don't have a choice. If you do suffer, you do have a choice of how you suffer and what the outcome, what kind of life will you build, will you shape, will you form in how you engage in the suffering that is ordained for you in your life.